Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the 195.1 FM and, of course, 1080 AM on your radio dial. And my regular listeners, hey, that's you. Thank you for tuning in. Know that I'm doing something when my theme song runs past a couple of, about 50 seconds, 20 seconds. And we are doing something with the computer. And it's something I'm not familiar with, and Jeff has helped me, and it's called a flash drive. Evidently, we're going to use that with a little bit of music on it from one of my guests here on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and that is Michael Daly. And, Michael, you were here with your daughter just before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a good time speaking with you.
And as you were getting your coffee out of your car, I was sitting in my car, and you walked by, and you did something over, waved over your head, and I thought, oh, he noticed I'm bald, and that wasn't it. Last time you were here, what happened?
The last time I was here, you did the interview, and you had to run outside and close the topper on your car because it was starting to snow. So yeah, I was just giving you a little bit of grief about that as I came in.
Fortunately, some folks upstairs here in the building, the old T-Lander Rexall Drugs building, medical arts building, now Carlton's building, where I think they do all of their alma mater stuff out of this building. And, of course, Jeff Johnson has studios here and had them here for several years. And they came downstairs and told the office people here at KYMN that my sunroof was open.
Sunroof, that's right.
And it was raining and snowing.
It was snowing,
And I ran out during a break and rolled the windows up, and when I got off work and went out there, I had to clean the snow off the front seat.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow, my guest this morning, Mike, can I call you Mike, or do you prefer Michael?
I prefer Michael because there's so many Mikes in the world.
All right. Well, there's four of them in here.
Oh, when I was in grade school, there were three or four of us in one classroom.
Yeah.
And everybody was Mike, you know, so it got kind of confusing, so I just decided at an early age to go with Michael.
Oh, did you get my little bit of humor about there were four Mikes in here?
Yeah, now I do.
Yeah, I'm using one, and there's one over there.
Yeah,
then you're using one, and you are one.
And I am one, there you go.
I just came from coffee. There are a group of guys that get together each morning, and they have coffee,
mm-hmm.
and then they play a numbers game, and one person will write a number down from 1 to 1,000.
Okay.
Then they go around the table guessing numbers, and whoever ends up with that correct number that the guy wrote down, and he can get stuck with it, has to pay for the coffee.
Okay.
Well, I was smart today. I went in and I brought my own container,
mm-hmm.
and I got a cup of coffee and I paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat down, Wayne, are you in the game? I said, no, I'm not. I bought this cup of coffee because I don't know when you're going to play the game, and I got to get to work because
mm-hmm.
this is about 8:30. And they said, okay. Well, then after that, everybody puts a half a dollar in a pot, and then they play the numbers game, and whoever gets that number correctly, that it isn't getting stuck with the number. This time you get to have the money.
Cool.
So I ended up playing that game, and I won.
So you're a morning gambler.
Yeah, and I got my coffee free
because
of all the 50 cents I got from all the guys. So I'm happy about that. I see Jeff has left the room, and I'm turning around, and Maybe you know more about what's over there than I do.
Well, I brought some tunes in with me. I'm a songwriter, recording person, whatever, and I just thought maybe it'd be kind of fun to bring in some of my tunes and see if we could get them put on the air, because last time I was in here with Marissa, we did some Christmas songs, and I just thought that maybe this way I could share a few of these tunes and see if people liked them. And
well, guess
like
what? I'm sorry, Michael, but I'm looking at the screen, and I have no idea. Does
Stone Ripple River, that's song number 3.
Okay, then is there a WMD?
Yep, that's a WMD.
Okay, I got it. Now I just got to give it a try and see if I can get it to work.
Yeah.
I'm looking at there now. This is kind of interesting because I'm from the old school, studio and
same,
all that.
Same here.
And it's really, if you're computer wise, I mean, it's fun to sit behind the microphone and negotiate through the computer to play the things you want. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to play a father's perspective sending his soldier son to the Middle East. Why would you write a song about that?
Well, it was just when my son turned 18, he was picked up by the U.S. Army and disappeared. And it's kind of just difficult for a dad to see his son go. And then ended up over in the Middle East. And you just, you know, dad worries about his son. And being a musical guy, it was just really natural for me to put it into a song.
And when you say I was picked up by the Army, was that a choice?
He joined the 82nd Airborne Infantry.
Isn't that kind of a famous one?
Yeah, they and the 101st are both kind of thought to be as like kind of a bunch of tough guys.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really, really proud of them, you know, but at the same time, you know, you send your son off and, you know, you spent the last 18 years nurturing him and trying to instill in him the sanctity of life and everything, and then he goes into the military and they teach him the things that they teach him there. So it's just like, you know, it's just a big change.
That's good, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm so incredibly proud of him.
Now, this show, of course, is 2 hours long, and we're going to learn a lot about you.
Okay.
And as I talked to you on the phone to set up this interview, I wanted to get to know about you because I don't see guys your age wearing suspenders very often.
I love my suspenders. And the reason I love them so much is because I'm constantly carrying tools, pliers, ratchet, wrenches, whatever in my pockets. And, you know, when you just wear a belt, you know, it kind of tends to pull down on your pants a little bit. So I just love the suspenders because it helps hold everything up.
Well, now, you mentioned all of those tools, et cetera. It reminded me of a nice little thing you dropped off at the studio for me.
Oh, sure.
And it's, let's see if I remember correctly, it's an ash tree.
Sure, it's a slice from an ash tree.
And it's about an inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
And it has little rubber pads on the bottom.
Right.
And then it is covered with all kinds of stuff that makes it just glow. I mean, it's so beautiful. You can count the years that tree had lived by the rings in it.
Sure.
And what got me was how dark it is in the middle part.
Mm-hmm, the old wood.
Yeah. And then it lightens up as it goes out.
Sure.
And then you did something to it that ends up that you could actually use as a cutting board.
Sure. It's actually a slice. And the tree was probably laying on its side. It was out in the backwoods behind our barn there. And I cut a whole bunch of them and sliced them, and took them, brought them into the barn and put them into a big vat of propylene glycol antifreeze, which is a food grade antifreeze.
And they a real antifreeze,
yes.
I put in my car?
No, that's ethylene glycol, which is highly toxic. Propylene glycol is a safer, more food grade. It's used in food production systems and stuff like that.
Okay.
But anyway, I had to put these slabs into this propylene glycol for approximately 3 months, and what it did was it displaced the actual water content in the slab of wood with a combination of water and propylene glycol, so that after the 3 months, I took these slabs out, and then I let them dry for another 3 to 6 months so that when they dry, they wouldn't get all cracked and split. And then after we got them all dried and stuff, then I just hit them real hard with a rough grit belt sander and just took them down to a relatively smooth finish, and then did it with some ultrafine. And then once I got them nice smooth surface on there, I took the bottom sides and I coated them with a non-food grade varnish, just something to protect and seal the wood. And then on the top side, which is the part that you see that's on the top of your table, that is a food grade, same kind of varnish that they put on butcher block tables and stuff like that. So it's actually something that is safe, you know, safe for food contact. But they're beautiful pieces of wood. The one I gave you, I think, was about probably 85 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And like you said, the center was a darker wood because it was the original wood. And then as they grow out, the wood gets lighter. But it's interesting to count the rings because you can see on each ring width is different because of the amount of moisture or rainfall that happened during that year. And some of them are just so barely tiny you can hardly see them, and some of them are nice and wide and thick, so you could tell that year they had a lot of rain.
Okay.
But anyway, it's got a food grade surface on it, and you can put your cheese or you can put your vegetables or whatever you want, you know, on there and chop them up and eat off of it and then just rinse it off. And if you just want to use it as a decorative piece, you can put a candle on it, whichever you want. But I just it was just a little appreciation from me to you for letting Marissa and I come in last time and share some of the Christmas music that she and I put together.
Well, Michael, I appreciate it. As a matter of fact, my wife has a table that I think may have been her grandmother's.
Okay.
And it was refinished. Mm-hmm. And it has three inserts that you can put in it for, you know, bigger
sure.
Thanksgiving dinner, and you've got sure. a lot of people. And it's on wheels, and it sits in our dining room, and it's a centerpiece because you can see all the grains of wood. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't know what kind of wood it is, but it's really pretty, mm-hmm. and it's real dark.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it'd be mahogany. What do they make tables out of 100 years
well,
ago?
Well, I don't know. It all depends on what it's stained with, too, because you know, the stain changes the color of the wood,
okay.
So who knows?
Yeah, it's been stained. As a matter of fact, one of the three inserts we can put in there was mismeasured, and it's off by about a 16th of an inch.
Okay.
And you notice that when you put a tablecloth on it, because
sure.
there's a little curl right there.
But it adds character to the history.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Character to the history of the table.
So I put your piece that you gave me on top of that
mm-hmm.
table. I mean, it sits on the center of the table now.
It's now your piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the table, of course, has all the inserts out of it, so it's shorter. And it looks real nice on
yeah,
there.
Yeah,
real nice.
I'm happy that you're happy with it. I probably made 50 or 60 of them. And I just enjoy giving them away to people in situations like this, you know. And it just pleases me to be able to do that because I think they're so beautiful, so incredibly beautiful.
It's 9:15 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. My guest this morning is Michael Daly. And I invited him to come back and talk about him and I'm going to take a break, and we'll be back in a flash with more information. Speaking about flash, I might get a lesson in flash drives.
Let us help you maximize your earnings with a certificate of deposit from Community Resource Bank. Invest in a 60-month CD at 2% or a 48-month at 1.75 annual percentage yield, or choose a 54-month bump option at 1.70% APY. Get the best deposit rates around with Community Resource Bank in Northfield, Cannon Falls, and Roseville. Good bankers, good friends. $25,000 minimum deposit required. Penalty for early withdrawal may reduce earnings. Other rates and terms are available. Member FDIC.
At Harry Brown's Family Automotive, everything is based on Brown family values, like being friendly, professional, and involved in the community. Right now, we've got a huge selection of vehicles, all American made, every one of them. Check out that new 2017 Chevrolet, GMC, or Buick you've had your eye on for a while now. Also, we always make sure to peel off every inch of that sticky new car window sticker for you. Harry Brown's Family Automotive in Faribault. Online at harrybrownsgm.com.
We're back live and in color on the Wayne Eddy Affair. By the way, today is January 10th, and it is 2018. Last night I was, you know how the first of the month you get all your bills in and all that, so I was writing checks. I'm not. I don't get on the computer and pay bills. So I just like the old-fashioned way. And so I was writing checks, and I was so proud of myself. Not once did I write 2017. I did them all 2018. That's pretty good. Been writing checks for 50 or more years, and it always seemed in January I'd forget it's a new year. Speaking about a new year, we're having a new interview with a gentleman who was here with his daughter recently, just before Christmas, and we played some Christmas tunes of his daughter, singing some beautiful songs. But today he brought in a flash drive. And I'm going to play a portion of a selection, and you want to do more of your music. I want to do more of you. And I see you all came prepared. You gave me a list of the songs on there and the idea behind them, and then I see you have a whole bunch of things over there. Like bullet points.
I just made some notes for myself because I don't know if you remember when you took your first swimming lessons or whatever, you get kind of these butterflies, and I kind of got a little bit of butterflies before coming in here, so I thought I'd just make a few notes for myself so I could speak half intelligently.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you might want to share them with me because evidently there are points that, you know, was in your lifetime that is something we can talk about. I wonder, where's your farm?
It's on Cates Avenue, which is just west and a little bit west of Northfield and Dundas, a couple of miles.
Okay, yeah. Tell me how I would get there from here. We're leaving downtown now.
Okay, let's go through Dundas, okay? Let's go out County Road 1.
Oh, okay, Dundas. I'm familiar with that.
We're actually considered Northfield, but we're close to the Dundas line. But if you were to head out of Dundas towards the freeway on County Road 1, and you would just go 1 mile, and you would turn right on the first dirt road, which is Cates Avenue, and go 8/10 of a mile down the road. You can't miss our place. Got a great big gray barn with a whole bunch of horses standing outside.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, I think I asked you before when you were here if there's a guy by the name of Rick Dahl that lives in that neighborhood.
The name is familiar, but I'm not sure who he is or where
he
is.
I think he was into horses.
Could be.
She was a lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah, he has a company, I think, in Faribault.
Okay.
At least he used to live out, I think, where you're at.
Uh-huh.
I think. I'm not sure. But I've got lost. I feel like a dummy. You know Billy Stanton?
Oh, sure, Bill. Yeah.
Well, you know where he lives.
He's a couple of miles away, yeah.
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 Well, I always forget it. He invites me to his March Madness. It's, you know, basketball in March and St. Patrick's Day.
Sure.
He's Irish. And
sure.
He has a lot of friends from Altamira.
Those Irish people. You'd never know about those Irish people.
My grandmother came from Ireland. I always remind people of that.
We used to be O'Daly, so yeah.
Mine was Casey.
Okay.
And County Clare.
We were County Cork.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. We were neighbors.
Yeah, I guess so.
I have no idea where they are.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I went out there, and if you go out to Dundas and you go past College City Beverage,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's just before College City Beverage, and there's a road,
mm-hmm.
and you take a right on that, and you'll end up right at a corner with like three or four intersections.
Yeah.
And Stanton's house is right. If you go straight ahead, it's his house.
Yep.
Well, I didn't go straight ahead.
Okay.
I turned left, and I drove around looking for his place. I didn't cross County Road 1 mm-hmm. To the north. I didn't go north. But I finally went, well, here it is. I could have just stopped at the stop sign and drove straight ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting intersection there because it's got one that angles off and then it's got two or three others that are regular, normal right angle turns.
So I got to remember when I leave Dundas and I go over the railroad tracks and I go past Summers.
At Dave Summers' place.
Okay.
You turn right on the dirt road. It's Cates Avenue.
Okay. So is that a large farm? Are you a farmer?
Well, no. We bought the place. My folks bought the place in the mid-50s, and we moved there.
Okay.
I was born in Northfield Hospital, but we lived on a lake home, just a little country house on Lake Marion over by Lakeville.
Yeah, I know where that is.
But we bought the farm in the mid-50s. And we've been there ever since. It was a quarter section, 160 acres.
You were born in 1953?
1953, yep.
How about that?
Yeah.
Pretty smart, huh?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, yeah. And been there ever since, you know, so.
Well, do you remember living on by Enlarge Park up there at Lake Marion?
Boy, I tell you what, I've just got some really, really vague memories of the beach and walking down to the lake.
Is that where you got your fear of water?
No, actually, I don't have a fear of water. I actually used to be a lifesaver and swim instructor.
Well, the butterflies.
Oh, no, the butterflies were just coming in here because you're so awesome and I'm so scared of you.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've had the real pleasure of lecturing at the Brown Institute, the former broadcast school. And I told him, I says, you know, everybody that gets up in front of a crowd to speak has butterflies in
their
stomach.
Pretty normal. Yeah.
And the trick is to get those butterflies to fly in formation.
Okay.
And be prepared.
There you go.
And then you can wing it.
Yeah. Well, they say too, those butterflies are actually good for you too, because it helps you hone what you're doing, helps you fine tune what you're doing.
Yeah. Many great entertainers or speakers have said, you know, if you aren't nervous just before you go on, you're not really that interested in what you got to say.
Something's going on there. Yeah. Yep.
Although I did give a graduation speech at Brown College, and I'm thinking it's going to be all broadcasters, and it was computer people and cooking people, chef school. I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds of non-broadcasters, and I got done, and I was so embarrassed because it was directed right to broadcasters and what it's going to be like with your first job and what you got to do and all that. I wish I'd have known then what I know now. It's 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, a little bit of music on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We're going to find out all about WMD, Father's Perspective, sending his soldier son to the Middle East. What does WMD stand for?
Well, most people think of WMD as Weapon of Mass Destruction, but it's actually my son's initials.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm supposed to click this thing, and let's see if I can do it.
I think it's a double click.
No, he said a single click to get the song up there. And I got, there we go. And we'll listen. Michael Daly.
And the M240 gun, the 50 Browning M2 gun, the Turretin gun. Where are you now? Signed on the paper, you just had to take the vow. Where what do you see? Crazy world's a mess up, it's true, freedom just ain't free. Freedom just ain't free. Freedom just ain't free. He's there for you and me. Mm-hmm.
far in a desert's choking grime. Half a world away, bombs ticking on Middle Eastern time. Dark eyes all around, and skies blood red. When you can't tell who's friendly and who wants you dead. A few more long months, he'll pack up gear, and then we'll pass through Kuwait and be home, be right here. Be home, be right here, he'll be right here. Where are you now? Sign on the paper, you just had to take the vow. Where and what do you see? Crazy world's a mess. Freedom just ain't free. Freedom just ain't free. Freedom just ain't free. He's there for you and me.
A father's song to his son who's in the service in the Middle East, and all from when he was a little boy until he became a man, going off to kind of gets to you a little bit, I see.
You bet it does. Yeah. You bet it does.
Now, that was recorded live and in color in your bathroom or your bedroom?
No, not in my bathroom, but in a little kind of side bedroom.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you overdubbed and
right,
et cetera. And
right.
That's all you harmonizing with yourself.
Everything was done in that little room.
Yep. A lot of fun, huh?
Yeah, I just love doing that kind of stuff, you know, and especially something like this because it really captures a moment in time.
Well, not everybody that does what you do as a hobby gets to be on the radio, and played on the radio.
And it's a real honor, and I appreciate it.
And of course, we're now going to make you join ASCAP and BMI and pay the license fee.
I have no clue what any of that stuff is.
Oh, okay. That's they are official and legal money takers.
Oh, great!
Yeah. Great. I say that because I've had my run-ins with them, but anyhow, they do help benefit the writer of songs.
Okay.
The performer gets considerably less. The writer gets all the money. So let's go through that song, WMD. That's
sure.
Is that William Michael Daling?
William Michael, yes it is.
And War of Mass Destruction.
he's
18 years old.
He was 18 years old. And he,
what do you say was?
Well, I mean, he's now out and he's done.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
What, did he go to Northfield High School?
Oh, sure did.
Played
football. And
he did?
Yeah, sure did.
How good was he?
Well, he was pretty darn good. He was last couple of years... 11th and 12th grade, I think he was a defensive and offensive tackle or whatever.
Big guy.
Yeah, big guy. And pretty proud of him. He was with the team when they went to the Dome. They took second place a few years ago.
Yeah.
Pretty exciting.
That's
a
few years ago.
Yeah.
So you got to know Bubba.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Bubba's a great guy.
Now, what about his mom?
His mom, Julie, my wife.
Yes,
she's an ESL teacher in Burnsville.
Okay, what's an ESL?
English is a second language.
Oh,
she teaches kids from parents that are immigrants that actually have English as their second language and not as their first language. And basically, she's teaching them, helping them with their English so they can function, you know, within our society.
If you just tuned in, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Michael Daly. And Michael and I are talking about his desire to his love of making music. And
absolutely.
His daughter has a beautiful voice, and she was here just before Christmas, and we played some songs that she had recorded with your help. Oh Holy Night, another song, beautiful voice. It's 9:32 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Got to tell you that yesterday I stopped by the QB, the quarterback club, and I had their QB hamburger, flame broiled, delicious, with cheese and everything else that goes on that, and then a nice large order of fries and a drink, and I think it was like $7.27 or something. Good deal at the QB, locally owned, locally managed. We invite you to stop in for breakfast every morning, of course, until 10 o'clock, and that means you have 28 minutes to stop in, and they'll prepare a breakfast for you that would be like what we assume farmers do each morning, or perhaps you're a cup of coffee and a donuts guy or gal. The Quarterback Club, place to support, locally owned, locally managed. My guest this morning is Michael Daly. And Michael, let's talk a little bit more about you. I know that ideally for you, you probably would like me to play all these songs three times. But you said that your folks, you were born in the Northfield Hospital.
That's right. Yep, the old hospital.
53 years ago.
And 64 years ago. I was born in 53.
Yep. There we go. Yep. 64. That's it. So now, and you don't remember Lake Marion. You moved to the farm. Now, was your dad a farmer when he bought the farm?
No, my parents were both teachers. My mom and my dad, they met in the Navy. They were both air-to-air gunnery instructors. And
your mom?
My mom. She was one of the first.
She
was one of the first women air-to-air gunnery instructors, I think, in the United States. She was one of very few.
Yeah.
And but anyway, they met doing that kind of work in the Navy. And when they both got out, they came to Northfield. And
how come Northfield?
Well, actually, my grandfather, her father, had a hardware store here downtown Northfield.
Well, what was the name of it?
It was Frank Bernard. I don't know the name of the. I think it was just. It was like an Ace Hardware. It was kind of like a chain, a franchise, whatever. But he had a hardware store right downtown here.
Do you know where?
It was right across from. It was right across from the. I can't remember exactly.
Well, there was a McDonald's Hardware next to Bierman's.
This was way before that.
Okay.
Yeah. It was right across the street from the Rubenstein.
Okay.
In that corner building.
All right.
Yeah.
So that was your grandfather?
That was my grandfather. And so my mom actually went to Northfield High School. And then when they went.
What was her maiden name?
Bernard. Betty Bernard.
Betty Bernard.
Yeah.
And your dad, okay. What? Your dad was Daly.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Got it. I got it. Okay. help me out.
No, that's all right.
Okay. So anyhow, Daly married Bernard.
Right.
Okay.
Well, first they went in the Navy, did their Navy stuff, and then they came back. And they got married, and went to Carleton.
What was going on in the world when they were in the Navy?
Well, it was World War II, and they were actually training gunnery.
Really?
Doing gunnery instruction for flyers. I'm 64.
Okay. Yeah. So they were just kids.
Well, yeah, I guess so, you know. Yeah.
I didn't know that. They had a gunnery instructor during the Second World War.
Air-to-air gunnery, yep. They had first, I guess.
What do you mean air-to-air? They actually were in flight?
Well, they
shooting a gun?
They would start out doing classroom stuff.
Yeah.
And then once they would graduate from the classroom stuff, then they would go to probably videos or videotype things so that they could kind of learn to train their weapons. And I believe they actually did actual flying in light planes, you know, to actually get their hands on the trigger, so to speak, to teach their students.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then they got out of the Navy, and this was towards the end of the Second World War,
sure,
I assume.
Sure.
And then they end up taking advantage of the GI Bill.
Right here at Carleton.
And they go to Carleton College.
Yeah.
And, of course, Carleton is known as the Harvard of the Midwest,
sure,
or whatever.
You bet.
So what did they majored in? Teaching, evidently.
English,
or whatever.
Well, my dad became a social science, social studies, Phi Ed, French teacher, kind of a combination of all those things. He taught in Lakeville for, 30-some years.
Wow.
And my mom, they were married at the time. And my mom, after her second year, became pregnant with my two oldest brothers, who are twins.
And what are their names?
Patrick and Thomas.
And Patrick and Thomas are then how many years older?
They are 5 years older than myself. So that would put them right about close to 70.
So they are your big brothers.
I guess if you want to call them big, I call them older.
Okay. Plus five. All right. Are they both still on Earth?
Yes. My oldest brother, Patrick, he's down in the Florida Keys trying to repair his house from the damages that they had down there from the hurricane. And my other brother, Thomas, is in North Mankato. He's a retired master sergeant.
A master sergeant. So he made a career out of the Army.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Then do you have younger brothers or sisters?
I was afraid you're going to have to ask me all these names. Yes, I do. I've got...
Okay, Pat and Thomas are the oldest by 5 years.
Right.
And then it's you.
No, then it's my sister Kathleen.
Okay, Kathy, and how much older is she than
you? She's 4 years older.
Okay.
It was kind of a Catholic boom, 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 boom thing.
Okay. I was going to ask you, did you go to St. Dominic's?
Yes, you know, I did.
Pat and Thomas twins, Kathy.
Yeah.
What's her name today?
Gaffney.
Gaffney?
G-A-F-F-N-E-Y.
Is she local now?
Well, she was living up in Brainerd for several years, Baxter, Minnesota, and she's now living in Golden Valley with her son and his wife and their two children.
Okay, so that's Sister Kathy, 4 years older. Then after Kathy,
this is Mary Beth.
Mary Beth, how many years older is Mary Beth?
She's 2 years older than I am.
Okay, Mary Beth.
I was afraid you're going to ask me all these names and dates and ages.
Well, this is fun. I like to do this. It's 9:38 on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and my guest this morning on Kim Radio is Michael Daly. And he lives out south and west of town, out past Dundas. After Mary Beth?
Comes moi, myself.
Moi. How do you spell moi?
I don't know. That's French for me, I think.
Okay. Michael. And then after Michael?
It's Julia.
Julia.
Yes, Julia.
I married a Julie.
Okay. So did I.
Okay.
But not my sister.
No. Well, if you insist. excuse me. Julia, how many years younger is she?
Julia is 2 years younger than myself.
After Julia?
It comes Francis, or Frank.
Frank, okay.
Yes.
And how many years younger is Frank than
Frank
you?
Frank is about three or four younger than myself.
And then after Frank?
Comes Bridget.
Bridget. Oh.
Used to call her Geet.
Bridget Bardot,
yeah.
Back in the old days. Bridget is how many years younger than you?
Oh, gosh, I wish you'd quit asking me these questions. But she's probably about 8, 9.
Oh, yeah. That's
eight,
quite...
9. Yeah, there was a little bit
between
of
between Frank and Bridget.
There was a little bit of a...
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot Peggy. There was a Peggy in there, a Margaret.
Where's Peggy at?
She's after Frank.
Okay, so we'll put Peggy in there.
I knew you were going to ask me these questions.
How many years younger is Peggy?
I don't know, a bunch.
A bunch, okay. We'll put down four.
Oh,
we'll
more,
put,
more
we'll
than
put
that.
Five. We'll give your mom a break there.
Probably a little bit more than
and
that.
And then Bridget's about 8.
Yeah.
Okay, then after Bridget?
Is my youngest brother, Samuel.
Samuel.
Sam. Yeah.
And how much is he?
He's about 10 or 11.
Okay.
10 or 11 years younger.
I'll put 11.
Yeah.
Anything after Sam?
No.
Okay. I noticed you were taking a break, sipping your coffee.
Yeah, I'm getting
so
kind of dry mouth.
So let's see. Here. We have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids.
I did it right. Yep.
10 kids.
10, yeah. I counted right.
How big was the house out there on the farm?
Tell you what, we had 5 functioning bedrooms upstairs. And then my folks had a...
That's a big, big upstairs.
Well, it's, I don't know, it sounds big, but rooms aren't that big. But then my folks had a room downstairs, so, yeah.
So you had, Pat and Thomas, those are both boys, right?
Right, yep.
Okay, so Kathy and Mary Beth, 3, 4, 5. We had 5 of each.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow.
5, yeah.
Okay, so it was easy to split up the upstairs bedrooms.
I guess so. You know, at times there were 3 or 4 of us in one room, you know. I mean, it just kind of was the way it was, you know, but that's okay.
And your dad owned a hardware store.
No, that was my grandpa.
Grandpa. What did your dad do?
My dad was a teacher at Lakeville.
That's right. You told me that 6 times.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
And he taught science.
He taught French. He taught social studies. He did coaching and... Who knows what else? And I know he drove a school bus part of the time, too.
Okay. Yeah. And all of these kids went to Northfield High School?
Yep.
And St. Dominic's?
Yeah, most of us, the older ones, went to St. Dominic's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it called Rosary at the time?
My older brothers, when they went there, it was Rosary.
Okay.
Yep. With black-clad nuns.
Okay.
Yep.
So now, because the twins are like... 6 years older than you?
Yeah, about five or six. Yeah.
Okay. And so were they off into the world by themselves when you came along?
Well,
I mean, when you were, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah, being that they were older, you know, they had more, they had different responsibilities, you know, at that time. You know, we had a couple of milk cows and a couple of sheep and a few animals like that. And they had chores that they had to do that some of us younger ones, you know, were too little to be able to
actually. But you eventually rose to the position of doing it yourself.
Oh, you bet, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So here's a teacher from Lakeville with a family of 10 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a couple of cows on the farm, and I would then assume you had to milk them twice a day.
You bet.
Now, did you have Serge or De La Salle, or did you do it by hand?
It was all by hand.
Yeah. Wow.
Milk buckets.
Were you pretty good at it?
Well, after a while, you get pretty good at it. Yeah, we had one cow, Dottie. She had one teat that was just really tough that she had to use both hands to get milk out of. But for the most part, yeah, you just learned to do it, and you did it. And
well, tell me about... January morning,
boy,
it was 30 below zero.
I tell you what, the warmest place on a cow is right underneath their belly. You know, right. And at first, when you put your hands on that cow, she jumps.
Yeah,
but yeah, it warms up your hands pretty quick.
So now, when you got up in the morning, tell me what the daily deal was. I mean, you look too, and you are almost too young to have the stories of the people I've interviewed that are in their 80s. Mm. So you get out. Now, did your upper house have grates so the heat would come up to the bedrooms, but there was no heat up there, or was it modernized where it had its own?
Our house is where I'm living now is the original house.
Yeah.
And, at the time when I was a child, we had a coal bin down in the basement.
Okay.
And the coal truck would come every so often, and we'd open up a window in the basement, and he'd put the slide down, and all of this black, dusty, dirty stuff would be shoved into the house. And every day we had to go down to the basement, especially when it was really cold, and shovel from the coal bin into the coal hopper, which fed it into the furnace, which heated the hot water boiler, which went up into the radiators. And
oh, you had radiators, okay.
Kept us, yeah, same ones are in the house now.
Upstairs, okay.
The whole house, yeah.
Steam heat.
No, it was hot water.
Hot water, yeah.
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
You know what? When you just described that, I remember doing that myself.
It was scary. You know, when we were little kids, we'd have to go down there and, you know, you'd go in this black room that was
and
dirty and dusty.
And as a little kid, that a shovelful is heavy.
Yep.
And then it would be hot, and then you had to shake it.
Yep.
Remember when you had to shake it and get all the
clinkers out?
Clinkers, and, right.
Yep. Yeah.
Gosh darn. And then you had to carry them outside.
Yep, and then you have to bury them or find a place to put them.
Well, we put them in the muddy driveways.
Okay, sure. Makes good roads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and every once in a while, you know, a pin would shear on the shaft that actually augers the coal into the bottom of the furnace, and you'd wake up in the morning and the house would be 50 degrees, and you'd know right away. You had to get down there and do some repairs.
Okay, so you had the two cows and you had to milk them by hand.
Yep.
Now, did you have breakfast before or after the chores and the school bus?
Well, I don't know. I guess I just remember eating a lot of oatmeal and malt meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it was probably after we did chores.
Because
then you get cleaned up a little bit and don't smell quite so bad and stuff
that. Was that a thing when you were particularly in junior school, junior high? Coming off a farm that has animals and the clothes that you wear, you know, you got the. Did you have the entryway where you had to take off your?
You call it a mud room.
Yeah.
All your dirty clothes go in there, and you got a great big huge sink, and you just wash everything, and you just make sure that the shoes that you wore in the barn were not the shoes that you wore to school.
Well, did you ever have kids tease you and say, "Oh God"? Of course, there are a lot of farmers around.
No, there were a lot of us back then. Yeah. You know, the buses were full of us.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just such a young guy, comparatively speaking. Did you have TV all your life?
Tell you what, we had TV once in a while when it was working. and it was black and white. And once in a while, we'd actually get to sit down and watch, you know, Walt Disney or something like that. But for the most part, you know.
Did you have to get on the roof and adjust the antenna?
Well, sometimes. But usually the actual TV itself didn't work. So,
oh.
Yeah, most of the time we just had to find other things to entertain ourselves with.
You'd think your grandpa would get you a TV through his hardware well, connections.
He was retired and living up in Golden Valley, and it wasn't quite the same thing. So.
All right, yeah. Well. We are going to take a break. Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is a gentleman by the name of Michael Daly, and he likes to do music, and we'll be playing another selection. But I have to follow a thought that I had, and we'll get back to that in just a moment on Kim. Now, we are a friend you can count on.
I'm Chris Lochner, your Northfield Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Financial investments are very important, but so are the investments of time, patience, and encouragement our young athletes receive from their coaches, teachers, and parents. That's why Edward Jones is a proud supporter of Northfield Raider football on KYMN 95.1 FM. Call 507-645-0270 or stop by my office at 1250 Highway 3 South for all your investment needs. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. They are your next-door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, for community, and for country. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
There we go, the number one tune of all of 1971, the year you graduated from Northfield High School.
That's correct. Just barely.
Okay. When you were at Northfield, you know what's fun about doing this show is that you've been around all the years I've been around. I have never met you before. Town is getting bigger, I guess. And I find it just kind of fun and interesting. When you went to Northfield High School, what teachers do you remember, or Phi Ed people? Or
a couple few days ago, you were doing an interview with another guest, and Al Birkbaum and Jed Domeyer were brought up. And I was actually very quite popular with those two teachers.
Oh, you yeah. must have been a miscreant, huh?
Yeah, no, Jed Domeyer, several times I ended up standing in the front of the classroom holding a book outstretched in each arm.
Yeah. And that was and you learned how quickly that
and
hurts.
it was well earned. And Mr. Birkbaum, I had to kind of watch my back during Phi Ed, because otherwise if I wasn't careful I'd get hit in the back of the head with a basketball.
Mm-hmm. How about did you take like woodworking or shop?
Sure.
Do you remember who they were?
Mr. Simonich.
No, he has a wonderful reputation.
Oh, yeah, he was a great teacher.
I'll tell you what, I heard guys about your age, evidently,
sure.
Talk about how in high school Simonich ticked them off.
Mm-hmm.
But after they got out of high school, they went, wow, I really respect that man.
Yeah.
Do you have the same type
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, he was kind of the scare. You'd look at him and he'd kind of walk up to you like a burly giant, you know, and you'd think, oh, I'm scared of this guy. But I tell you what, he'd help you with his hands on your project, and you just knew that this guy was a gentle giant. You know, he was just a great instructor. Mm-hmm. And he never had to really punish anybody, because all he'd have to do is just
look at you
straight in the eye, and yeah. you'd go, okay, I'll be good.
You know, that's a legacy that I think most teachers want to leave, is that a little bit of fear and dislike, and after you get out, wow, I really respect that guy the way.
Sure. Sure.
So, what do you have any other teachers that you remember?
Well, those were probably the three that I remember the most. In sixth grade, you know, I went 1 through 5 through St. Dominic's, but then did sixth grade at Sibley. And I had a teacher there by the name of...
Did you get kicked out of St. Dominic's?
No. We decided as a family to go into the public school system. But I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Kilty in sixth grade at Sibley, and he was really a great man.
Kilty?
Kilty was his name, okay. Yes. And then the other sixth grade teacher, her name was Mrs. Eggert, and she was really the one who brought out a lot of the music in me, because she realized right away the love that I have for music.
Mm-hmm.
And she put me in front of the choir, and myself and Robert Cox, Ray Cox, his younger brother, you know, we and Virginia Wall were probably the three soloists in the class and in the choirs and stuff. And it was quite a wonderful eye-opener.
Have you ever gone to the Rock and Roll Revival show?
You know, I haven't, because once I got out of school and got into the workforce and everything like that, and getting married and having kids and all this kind of stuff, it just got so busy. I never really had an opportunity to.
Well, your jaw would drop. I'm older than you, but compared to what we went through in regards to choir and singing,
right,
and all that,
right.
Everybody wants to be on American Idol.
Yeah. I know Craig Wozner was really involved.
Oh,
in
yeah,
that.
Craig Wozner.
He did such a wonderful job out there.
He and his wife Linda are good friends of mine. So we're talking to a gentleman by the name of Michael Daly, and he's right in the middle of the following. Pat and Thomas, twins. These are his siblings. Kathy, Mary Beth, all older than him. Then after him, Julia, Frank, Peggy, Bridget, and Sam Daly. So some of you listeners are going to say, oh, I went to school with Frank or with whatever.
Sure.
It's 6 minutes before, it's 10 o'clock on KYMN. I want to follow through on WMD, William Michael Daly, Wars of Mass Destruction. The song is about him being a little boy and growing up, and then dad has to send him off, or the son joins the service, and dad has to say good luck, go to basic, and then he comes home after basic training.
Yeah.
And he's different boy physically.
Totally different.
Okay.
Totally different. Yeah. He did the basic training and then the AIT and
AIT.
Individual training.
Okay. It was
advanced individual training.
Okay.
That was the paratrooper stuff.
Oh, really?
The jumping out of perfectly good airplanes.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
I've done it, but
you have.
In tandem.
So
it's great.
Well, they were jumping out from 500 to 800 to 1,000 feet.
Well, that's a little low for me.
Kinda
I did it at 10,000.
Kind of scary stuff, I would think.
So your kid is in the 800, what?
82nd Airborne. 82nd
Airborne.
He's all done with it now.
All right. Now, you're a father.
Yes.
Your kid goes through training camp, then goes through the individual training, and now he's a Army soldier.
Paratrooper.
And they send him where?
First deployment was Haiti. It was right after the earthquake down there. And the 82nd Airborne went down there, and basically they lived, they lived on the ground for what I understand 3 weeks, until they finally had some kind of shelter. But that was, you know, during after the massive earthquake down there. It was horrific things that I'm sure that he saw that he to this day doesn't talk about. But it was I'm sure it was a completely life changing experience for
Maybe
him.
Maybe I should have him on my show.
Well, I think you'd be lucky if you could get him to come in here and talk about it.
Okay. But, so after Haiti, where was he deployed?
After Haiti, came back, was on base for a while, and then he and his group went to Iraq. And they were part of the group that basically did the wind down. But he was a turret gunner. And so they'd drive around the base and drive around in the field, whatever, you know, and do whatever they did and try not to get blown up and then return to base. So.
And does he have a mum, doesn't want to discuss that part of his career?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes he'll talk about stuff and sometimes he won't. But I know it was a big life-changing experience for him.
Good?
I think in the long run, over the course of the lifetime, it will have been a good experience. But at the time, I think there were some things that were pretty difficult.
Well, what did you do as a father in regards to the modern era? Now, I'm assuming that you're talking about him being involved in the 90s, late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000?
Right.
Okay, so I remember listening to the radio, and there was a live report from a soldier in the field in battle. Mm-hmm. And he used his cell phone and called the radio station and described what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't this radio station, although I would do that if somebody offered. And so you as a father, knowing that the main problem over there is the IEDs,
sure.
and your son yes. is in the, a turret guy, which yeah. means his head is outside the,
right.
The yeah, vehicle.
They targeted the turret.
Yeah. So what was your thinking when you watched TV news or heard the radio or read the paper?
Well, as a dad, you're really concerned. You're scared. You want the best. You don't know what's going on. You never know what's going on.
Did you have phone conversations?
Very, very limited. Almost never. Yeah, because there were a lot of things I think that he either wouldn't talk about or couldn't talk about. But as a dad, I spent quite a few hours in the middle of the night on the middle of the gravel road on my knees.
Really?
Yeah, just praying.
Well, that's a good thing you went to St. Dominic's. You learned how to do that.
Yeah, good Catholic.
I thought I'd throw that out. You're starting to get a little emotional
yeah,
about that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a story there that's deeper. However, I'm not going to dig into it.
Sorry.
So how many kids do you – what is your wife's name, by the way?
My wife's name is Julie.
Oh, gee, isn't that great?
It's kind of confusing because my sister's name is Julia. And so yeah. they're both Julie and Julia Daly. So, of course, it gets kind of mixed up in town here sometimes.
But. Okay, so your wife is Julie. And how many kids do you and Julie have?
We have Will and we have Marissa.
You met
Marissa.
And Marissa's the beautiful daughter.
She is beautiful with a beautiful little three-month-old granddaughter now.
And Will, okay. You don't call him Bill, you call him Will?
Will, yeah. Don't.
Okay.
He used to be Willie. But now he's well.
Okay. And what's he doing now?
He's right now he's laid off for the winter, but he does road paving, asphalt. He's a hard worker. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a tough job.
He told me, he said when he got out of the Army, he was just 2 weeks out, and he already picked up a job doing asphalt. And he said, Dad, you know, I can work every one of these guys into the ground. And I said, Will, I'm sure you can, but I said, you probably don't want to because it'll make them mad.
Oh, so he's like a supervisor?
No, well, he may be foreman next year, but he just runs the equipment and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah, does he work mostly like on county or state contracts?
I think they do everything. They do huge okay. parking lots, driveways,
okay.
roadways. Works for Oman Brothers up in Albertville.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, way up there.
Yep.
Does he live up there?
He lives up in Champlin.
Okay, that's closer
yeah.
than Northfield.
Yeah, yeah, I wish you were a little closer here.
My wife, I'll never forget it. We had to go to St. Michael's. Why? They have an outlet store there. Yeah. And they have a purse. There's a store that specializes in purses.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
And what a, you know, all the way up there to buy a purse. 10 o'clock news is next on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Michael Daly. This is KYMN, 1080 AM for nearly 50 years, and The One, 95.1 FM out of Northfield, Minnesota.
Death toll rises, DACA cancellation staved off. I'm John Trout. At least 15 people are dead after mudslides and floods sweep through Southern California.
Does it look like a World War I battlefield?
Santa Barbara County Sheriff Bill Brown says the city was a carpet of mud and debris.
Huge boulders, rocks, down trees, power lines, wrecked cars, lots of obstacles.
Coast Guard rescue helicopters had to be called in as some 50 people needed to be hoisted to safety, and more than two dozen remain unaccounted for.
Jim Roop reporting. The White House calls a federal judge's injunction on DACA outrageous. The blocking of President Trump's plan to end the so-called Dreamers program has delighted U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren.
These are young people who are at risk for being thrown out of the only home that most of them know. So I'm glad to see this go forward.
Ex-British agent Chris Steele is under scrutiny for potential false statements over his Fusion GPS opposition research.
Two Republican senators, Charles Grassley and Lindsey Graham, on the Judiciary Committee, have recommended that Christopher Steele be investigated by the Justice Department. Steele is the author of the infamous Trump dossier. It reportedly contains speculation the Russians had salacious, compromising information on Donald Trump. Democrats have long contended the GOP's fascination with the dossier is designed to take attention away from the Robert Mueller Russia probe.
There's Bob Costantini. Senator Dianne Feinstein is releasing hours of testimony on the Trump-Russia dossier. Correspondent Manu Raju.
This all comes as Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, announced plans to sue both Fusion GPS and the news organization BuzzFeed for publishing the dossier last year over his concerns over defamation, because he says the allegation against him in the dossier are just wrong.
A new report by congressional Democrats warns of deepening Russian interference throughout Europe and concludes President Trump has offered no strategic plan to safeguard the U.S. from Kremlin meddling. I'm John Trout.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN. A friend you can count on, I used to say, and still do. And I have a guest in studio, a Northfield guy, graduated in 1971 from Northfield High School, right up on the hill from where we're seated, which is now the Carlton Witt Auditorium. And you went to both junior high school and high school there, I suppose.
Well, I did senior high at the new... At that time, it was...
Oh, 71, yeah, yeah, that yeah. I think.
But I did junior high there, up on the hill there.
Okay, so you played in Central Park.
Yes.
And then Al and Jed would stand up and look out the window and watch you. And I'll tell you a story about... Do you want to hear a story about Al?
Sure.
So this kid...
Big Al, we called him.
Yes. This kid, who was like you and me, probably a smart ass, excuse my language... gave Al Birkbaum the finger, the bird, whatever you call it.
That was a mistake. I can tell you that right now.
And, well, the kid's down on the Central Park playground, and the guys are up in the glass lobby.
Sure.
Now, I can tell this story. So the kid comes in and has to pass Al before he gets to where he's going, and Al said, what did I see you do down there? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I don't know. He said, you know, show me. What? Show me. So the kid puts his bird finger up. Just put that in your mouth. Kid put it in his mouth, and then Al taps him underneath the chin. How can the kid go home and say, I bit my finger, Al made me do it? Now, that's the story. I don't know if it's true. Yeah. I think it is true.
Well, back then, things like that could happen.
Oh, yeah.
Today, nowadays, no, but back then,
you can't even look at somebody.
Yeah.
Well, good and bad in both disciplines, I guess.
Sure.
My guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Michael... And Michael is the brother of a whole bunch of kids. There are 10 kids in the Daly family living out in the Dundas area. Are you the 55021? Are you the Dundas address?
We're Northfield, 55057.
Oh, really?
Actually, our farm kind of borders Dundas.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are technically Northfield.
But you have the Northfield phone line.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Now everybody's got cell phones.
Yeah, isn't that terrible?
Oh, it sure is different.
I don't know how to look people up on a cell phone, but I look in a book for somebody and they don't have a landline.
See, you and I need young people to school us on a lot of these things. You know, because like when I brought in this flash drive, I didn't know what they were until
I call it a thumb screw.
Yeah,
I didn't know what they were, and when people were talking about them and. I learned what they were, and I thought, "Well, that's marvelous." So we talked about WMD. We got the story on that, and your son William is working in asphalt, and he gets to get unemployment go south in the wintertime.
Well, he stays up here because he's got dogs, but he doesn't go south. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Does Will or Marissa? Marissa, you said has a 3-month-old?
Marissa, yeah, my first granddaughter. Yep.
And what's your granddaughter's name?
Jordan May.
May what?
Jordan May Joubert.
No. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Remember we kind of made fun with that?
Yeah, because...
French.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joubert.
See, Joubert.
Joubert, yeah.
I am from Ireland. Joubert. Ireland?
En français.
At 10:07 on KYMN Radio, I'll play another song.
Sure.
And then we'll get back to the life of.
Sure.
Okay?
Sounds good.
And let's see if I can get everything to work correctly here. That isn't it. Okay, let's see if I can do this. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here is... Michael, coming up, and there it is. What's this song about?
This is just a love song, a love lost song, to whomever.
Uh-oh. All right, a little piano going on there.
It's probably a 30-year-old song, so it's been around for quite a while.
Will I recognize it?
No, you've never heard it before.
When are you gonna start? Oh, Who's playing the piano?
That's me.
Okay.
Waves in the current like sharp searing snow,
Stone Ripple River.
Casting a stone up out to the river.
And that is not a new distillery or a new beer deal.
No, actually, I was standing on the bank of the Cannon River skipping stones. That's when I kind of came up with that tune.
Now, that's the name of that particular tune is about a love lost song. And is that personal or none of my business?
All music is personal. All the songs are personal.
I wouldn't want my wife to know I wrote a song about a love.
Well, this was a long time before I even knew her, so I guess, well, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, it was a huge crush that you had.
I suppose.
I had one. I had a crush on a gal. And this was when I was probably around 20. Yeah. And before I dated girls and all that, you know, but this one was so special.
And it just takes your heart, doesn't it?
And her name was Maureen.
Okay.
And she had like 5, 6, 7 sisters. Big fan. She went to like Our Lady of Peace, and I had gone to St. Thomas. You know, we were doing the Catholic thing. And my older cousin at a wedding dance that I took her to, my older cousin, good dancer, taught me how to dance, was in the Air Force, and he wore his uniform to the wedding reception, and he was an outgoing guy, mm-hmm. about 5 years older than me.
Intimidating.
And he hustled her.
Okay.
But dancing with her constantly. Uh-huh. I got so, it's the first time I ever got emotional about a situation like that. Got over it, obviously.
Sure.
Years and years and years later, I get Facebook or email, whatever I get.
Something like that.
Yeah. Are you the same Wayne Eddy that da 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 da? And I went, holy cow, that's Maureen.
Did your heart start thumping again?
No, it was a pleasure that she remembered me.
Sure.
And then, of course, what did I get? I got pictures of her husband and family and grandchildren and all that.
Yeah.
And it was nice. It was a nice. And then you say, should I share this with my wife? You kind of feel a little guilty.
Yeah, but you shouldn't.
And I didn't. I said, hey, guess what? I heard from a gal I used to date years ago. And just the other day, I got one from a gal that remembers giving me a ride to Tomo, Wisconsin.
Okay.
In my first radio job in 1964. Yeah. Life. Isn't it great?
That's just the way things are.
And you've got so much to look forward to.
Oh, sure.
You know, because you're just a puppy.
Well, I'm a
63 years old.
64.
Oh, 64.
I'm going to be 65. So
you'd think I would remember.
Watch it there, buddy.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're not. If you just tuned in, hi, everybody. A little conversation going on between myself and Michael Daly. And, Michael, I want to know a little bit more about you. Once you graduated from Northfield High School in 1971, you indicated that you weren't the most studious individual, that you may have been a little bit of a troublemaker, you know, miscreant, if you will. I don't know if I'm wrong. Tell me to
I don't think I was really a troublemaker. No. I think I got into some mischief. But I think
mischief, okay.
I think I want to attribute some of it to not being able to really focus closely on my reading abilities.
Were you dyslexic?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Maybe it had a little of that. Maybe it had a little bit of attention deficit. I don't know.
Yeah, but, attention deficit.
I would look at a paragraph and I would look at a sentence and literally I could get halfway through the sentence and my eyes would be going all over the page.
Oh.
It was different. So
what did you do when you graduated?
Once I got out of high school, I did a year. I went to Inverhills for a year.
Okay.
And I paid for it all myself and just really didn't know what I wanted to do and was still, you know, reading has always been kind of an issue.
And Vietnam was going on.
And I was the last year, of the Vietnam draft. And fortunately, I was able to
avoid
having to, you know.
Did you remember your number that you ended up with?
I think I was 118 or something like that.
I looked mine up just the other day, and I was 326.
Okay.
You can't get much better than that.
Yeah.
In Invergrove Heights. The war is going on.
I did it.
You avoided the draft by being in college, and then what?
Yeah, and then after a year, I really didn't know why I was there or what I was going to do there. So I went to work. I've always been a worker. ever since I was 12, I started working. But
where did you work at 12 besides the farm?
Well, that was Elvin Elbers.
Farm. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, no, he
big farm.
He scooped me up and put me in a tractor, and I was in heaven all through high school.
Did you help build Elbers Park?
No, I didn't. Okay. I wasn't involved in that, but I did just about everything else that the Elbers did.
Okay.
But after high school, I and then a little bit of college that I did, I went to work at that time it was the Faribault State Hospital, and I was it's now a big prison.
But what was that like?
I tell you what, it was an earth shaking. It was a life changing experience because I almost immediately went into one of the buildings that was occupied by multi handicapped individuals.
Physical and mental.
Physical and mental, and it was a matter of.
What did it smell like?
It wasn't very pleasant. It wasn't very pleasant.
What was your job?
My job was to do everything that they couldn't do for themselves. And so I learned an awful lot.
Toilet facilities?
Everything. Everything you can possibly imagine.
Wow.
Without going into any great detail. But it was...
do you say without going into...
Because some of the details were very intimate.
I get it.
Yeah. But it was, like I said, it was a life-changing experience.
Well, was it a good-paying job?
No, it wasn't great, but it was a job, and it was a humanitarian-type job. And I went into it with the attitude, like, I can maybe make these people's lives just a little bit better.
Make a difference,
You know, and even though there were a lot of situations where, you know, the response to the touch and the things that you were doing seemingly didn't seem to make any difference, but at the same time you knew that you were doing something that was okay with God.
Okay, now we know that Faribault has a place for the blind.
Right.
A place for the deaf.
That's correct.
And then a place for the mentally ill. And, of course, that all was all shut down, and a lot of those people are still on the streets in large cities, et cetera, because they had no place to go.
The actual hospital was shut down and turned into a prison. But the blind school where I also worked and the deaf school, which I also spent 20 years at, are still functioning.
I know, and thank you for clarifying, but I knew that, but I'm glad you said that because other people may have said, well, the hospital. So tell me what the internal part of that mental hospital looked like in regards to sleeping and eating and exercising.
Everything was clean. Everything was very clean. Everything, you know, we really had a strong emphasis on keeping everything clean. But you would walk into the building, and it would be divided. One side would be females, and one side would be males. And you would have all different types of handicaps, physical and mental. I spent most of my time, obviously, on the male side. And you would walk in, and there would be, you know, shower rooms and restrooms and things like that. And then you'd continue on into one of the two wings, and you would be into a big day area where you would have mats on the floor, chairs, wheelchairs, all kinds of different things like that. And then that was connected to a dining room that served both the male and female side. And then on the other side of the wing was a huge dormitory-type bedroom. And all of the beds were high rail metal beds because a lot of these residents weren't able to actually stay in.
Weren't they there because of a mental illness? And then in addition to that, some of them had physical disabilities.
In the building I was in, Willow Building, it was predominantly non-ambulatory.
Oh,
but
with mental illness.
With mental retardation. At that time, it was called retardation.
How about people that just did have nobody to take care of them, and they were mentally alert, but also handicapped?
There were other buildings on several other buildings on campus of all different levels of functioning, both ambulatory and non-ambulatory.
Now, the one we're talking about is the one that's most severe?
Yes, it really was.
Okay, locked doors, etc.?
The doors were locked, but these residents weren't ones that were going to run out the door because most of them couldn't even walk.
So, do you start at that position and then move up to where there are people that are more functional?
Well, there were. I was there. I was at that facility for 2 years, and there were opportunities to cross train, go into different buildings, work with different residents, and see different experiences.
Were they all one unit? Were they all the state of Minnesota?
It was all state of Minnesota. Right?
So when you worked at the home for the mentally ill, for lack of another description, you were on the Minnesota payroll.
That's right.
And when you transferred to the blind school.
The deaf school.
The deaf school?
Right.
Okay, you just got your raise by number and also worked with the state of Minnesota.
Basically just hopped.
How long did you work there?
I was at the deaf school for 20 years.
From when to when?
Oh, boy. Years, I can't. 2 years out of high school, I was at the. 2 years out of college, I was at the state hospital, then the deaf school for 20, and boy, I don't know what the years were.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to ask you.
Sure.
Did you know a woman named Dodie Thill?
No.
She worked at the home for the deaf.
Okay.
And she was assigned and teacher and all that.
Okay.
All right. I just wondered, you know, another connection perhaps.
Sure, sure.
1023 on 1080 Radio KYMN. Interesting conversation going on. Thank you for joining us if you just tuned in. And my guest is Michael Daly, and he's from the Dundas area. And he also is a songwriter and a singer and a piano player and a guitar player and what else? He's just multi-talented. We will be back right after this important timeout.
I love Grandpa's new home. There's so much to do.
That's right. Millstream Commons helps improve the lives of seniors through all kinds of fun activities. Personalized care from a dedicated and well-trained staff, amazing creative meals prepared fresh every day and served in a social setting, live-to-be-healthy fitness classes, private apartments with all the amenities of home, and a place to continue your relationships with family and loved ones. Millstream Commons, your vibrant life continues here.
You have to like this song.
I already do.
You know it?
I'm familiar with it.
I can think of younger days.
Name that tune.
When living.
Name the performers.
Was
gave you a hint there.
A man
I said performers.
Oh, it's a Bee Gees.
I could never see tomorrow.
You like them?
Love them.
Yeah.
I was
first introduced to them in the movie Saturday Night Live, or whatever it's called, that John and Travolta was in.
Sure.
How did you learn to play the guitar and play the piano? I know that, you know, you got your singing beginning in, I imagine, at St. Dominic's, and then on to junior high and high school.
I don't know. I never really have had any real instruction. In fact, a little bit of instruction that I have had, I kind of actually regressed in the progress. So I don't know. I've really just kind of self-taught everything.
The piano.
My piano and guitar and mandolin and banjo and all kinds of things like that.
What's your favorite?
My actual favorite is a bouzouki. It sounds like a motorcycle, but it's actually a stringed instrument. It's a bouzouki. But my main instrument is a guitar.
Okay. Now, do you, as a duet, or have you been in a band? Or,
oh, sure.
Who have you, what did you do? Name some.
Back in the old days, Craig and I used to do some stuff together.
Yeah. Craig Wozniak.
Yeah, John and John Stein and a few other guys. We
Well, name them if you can.
I think I just did. I can't remember. Let's see who the other ones. Mike Severson was one of us. Yeah, we played all over the place.
Couple of Mike and Mikes.
Yeah.
What did you call your group? Or
I don't know. We've had several different names.
Like,
the first one was way, way, way back, was called Post-War Skyscraper.
Post-War Skyscraper?
And that was a name that Nathaniel Hong and Brian Oswald invented. And I just kind of piggybacked on that, and that's kind of where I got involved with the local music scene as far as...
Okay.
But, That was a long time.
Yeah,
ago.
But well, that's just, there are people sure. that remember that. Sure. Tell me more bands that you.
No, after that, I don't know. We just kind of did a lot of different groups, and sometimes we had a name, and sometimes we didn't, and sometimes we changed the name each time we
did
played.
Did you ever play upstairs at the Rube?
Oh yeah, we played. I played all over. Played both colleges. Done dozens. Well, I shouldn't say dozens, but
what instrument?
Quite a few.
Guitar.
Different weddings and things. Yeah.
Yep. Acoustic.
Yeah, both acoustic and electric.
Okay. Yep. Did you play some rock and roll?
Oh yeah, we did. We did some old.
Did you have a solo?
I didn't do much soloing. No.
Did you do harmonizing?
A lot of harmonies. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, why wouldn't you take this thumbscrew or whatever, what do you call
flash
it?
Flash drive.
The flash drive of the different songs on here. Why don't you go and pay your friend, Craig Wozner, who has a very nice studio,
sure.
and record them where it can be, I assume his studios are probably better than the studio you're using in
sure,
your home.
Sure. Well, I've done quite a bit of work in his studio,
okay.
but I've kind of graduated from that to my own little spot
okay,
in the farmhouse.
Yeah.
And I think I can do pretty much what I need to do at home. And Craig's busy, you know, he's got things going on with church and everything going on with his farm and everything else. So, you know, this way it allows me to be able to do it in between chores or in between whatever it is that I'm doing. I'll go up and lay a few tracks down or something like that and write down some ideas and work on something and kind of drive my wife crazy with the new ideas that I'm
on. Do you have that, I'd call it new, but I guess it's been around for a decade, where it automatically puts your voice in the proper pitch, etc.
No, I don't use any. I don't use anything like that.
Do you know
that.
What I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, it's a auto tune or something
auto-tune,
like that.
Okay.
No, I don't use any of that, and I don't use a click track, which gives you a solid beat that goes through the whole number and stuff like that. And I try to keep what I'm doing relatively sanitized and refined, so like you'll actually be able to hear like maybe the little scritches on the fingerboard of the guitar or something like that that makes it real.
And you do that as a hobby for yourself and family?
I do it for myself, pretty much. At some point maybe in the future I'll consider, you know, trying to actually put something out, you know.
Okay.
I mean, right now what we're doing here is the most I've ever done in terms of putting it on the air or anything like that, and I have
have you ever sung in a wedding or funeral?
Oh, I've done more than a couple dozen weddings. I've done a couple funerals.
What's your favorite song to sing?
Oh, gosh.
At funerals or weddings or both?
You know, I don't know. It used to be the the wedding song by Peter, Paul, and Mary. They had something that, you know, that was real popular at the time. It was just called Wedding Song. I think it was Paul Stuckey who wrote it. But I don't know. It all depended on what the people wanted, because that's what I would play.
How about at funerals?
Funerals? Well, the last funeral I did was at, it wasn't actually a funeral, but it was a remembrance for a veteran at the Hastings Veterans Home. And I basically did Taps. Taps.
How can you do Taps as human, you got to blow a bugle,
I didn't have a bugle. I had a harmonica, and that's what they
wanted. Oh, yeah. You do the harmonica thing?
Sure, I dabble in a lot of stuff like that.
Ah, yeah. Good. I get a chance to tell my favorite harmonica joke.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you hear about the guy that loved the harmonica so much? Can you finish it?
No.
He married a woman with every other tooth missing.
Okay, now
a good one the first time you hear it. 10:30 is the time on 1080 Radio. My guest this morning is a fellow by the name of Michael Daly. Remember that. One Y, right? D-A-L-Y.
That's...
Michael, I want to get to know more about you. So when you got transferred or chose to leave the mental institution, or did you leave because that's when... they shut them all down.
No, that was way before they turned it into a prison. I took a sign language class, and it turns out that the instructor of the sign language class was the dean of students at the deaf school. And he pulled me aside after one of the classes and said, hey, would you like to come over to our campus? And I said, well, I didn't even consider it.
To our what?
To our campus, to the deaf school campus.
Oh, okay. Because campus, all right.
Yeah, because it's across the road, a different facility. Yeah. And I said, well, sure, I'll check it out. And as soon as I got over there, I realized it was a whole new experience, a great opportunity to really learn some significant interesting things, and I ended up there for the next 20 years.
So where did you and why did you learn signing?
Yeah, no, you had to learn.
Okay.
In order to be an employee
can
there.
Can you still do it?
Oh, yeah, I'm fluent. I haven't used it for a long time.
But you want to use it?
Yeah, sure, here it is.
No, I'm serious. I know of a place that we could, when I say we, and I'm Barbara Budd. I don't know if you know Barbara Budd.
No.
The Buds went to St. Dominic's, all of them. Anyhow, Barbara is in charge of getting signers mm-hmm. to help us during the raid reenactments.
Oh, okay.
And some years she has every raid signer there. Some years she doesn't because, you know, it's a it's a volunteer thing.
Sure.
Would you ever be interested in volunteering?
No, that'd be kind of fun, interpreting.
Yeah, you have to listen to the announcer
right.
And sign for him.
No, I used to actually do freelance interpreting. In fact, I was in the Faribault Public Schools for a while on the side doing that for some of the students that were being mainstreamed. And periodically...
That'd be a paid position.
That was
it?
Actually paid, yeah. Yes. And then every once in a while I'd get a phone call in the middle of the night from District 1 Hospital, and they'd need an interpreter for someone who had an emergency, and they didn't. So I'd come in, and I'd be the interpreter in the emergency room for a while. But.
Well, sign for me, will you? I'm going to take a brief break by, 15 seconds, just so I can see you sign. We'll be back after, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to do it. Okay. He's signing right now. Watch, folks. go ahead. Sign. We'll be back right after this important timeout on KYMN, a friend you can count on.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
1032 on 1080, 1033 on 1080 radio on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is a fellow by the name of Michael Daly. He's married to a wife by the name of Julie. He has a couple of kids, Will and Marissa, one baby granddaughter, Jordan. And tell me a little bit about growing up with a set of twins, and it's your mother and father's first babies, and they end up with twins. I'm wondering if they wondered the next time mom got pregnant if she was going to produce more twins and kind of worry about it because two babies can be a real pain.
Boy, if you're a good Catholic, you know, you have a lot of babies. That's kind of the way it is. But my two oldest brothers couldn't have been more different from each other than they could have been. One was really outgoing and fairly aggressive and assertive, and the other one was very intellectual and academic and very calm demeanor. And it was just so interesting how different they were, even though they were only 6 minutes apart from each other.
Now, they were your big brothers.
My oldest brothers.
Okay,
right.
Were they identical twins?
Nope.
Well, that helped a lot, didn't it?
Sure, yeah. Then you can tell the difference between who's who.
I have a neighbor who's... kids are now working and, have wonderful jobs. And they were little kids that would pick up sticks in my yard before I mowed it. And now, and one of them's kind of casual and laid back, brilliant. And the other one's more outgoing, but brilliant. And they're both in engineering.
Okay.
And they're just great kids. Mm-hmm. And they have an older sister who has taught in Belgium and now is assistant principal, I think, in a school out in California or Oregon. Anyhow, this show's more about you. Give me a little more taste of working in the school for the deaf. That campus, I always thought was very, very pretty.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Yeah, no, I started out working in the dormitory. I was what they called a house parent, and basically I was with the kids from the time they got out of school until they went to bed at night, and then usually a few hours after that. So I was considered a dormitory house father. And I was involved in all different aspects of their non-academic life, because most of the students there are residential. Or at that time, almost all of them were residential.
And why is that?
Because so many of them lived so far away in different parts of the state of Minnesota. Why?
Minnesota.
I mean, yeah, we had kids that were from way up by Grand Marais and Black Duck and all over the state.
And back, now, this is back in the 70s.
Right.
And so what these kids who were deaf were doing was learning a typical course for high school kids, grade school kids, of them?
These were like from age 4 up until some of them would stay until they were they were 21. Legally, they could stay there until they were 21.
Wow. Now, yeah. Was it like a regular school calendar where they left the campus in June and came back in September?
Yep, they went home. For several years, there wasn't a summer program, but then later on, a summer program was actually established, and so we would get a certain population that would come back for the summer program, which was less academic, but it was still a very learning type environment. So,
And they were, like you say, from 4 years old till 21 if they wanted to stick around.
Right.
So would you just say that they were sent to a boarding school, simple as that?
Well, it was a boarding school, I guess you could say that. I mean, it was something that the parents, of course, you know, would have to agree to. They'd have to be willing to separate themselves from their children during either the course of the entire week, or in some cases, if they lived quite a ways away, you know, their children probably wouldn't go home except for maybe Easter and Christmas and school breaks and things like that. So
you know, the perception is that the wealthy people in this country, and particularly those that may be entertainers, et cetera, send their kids off to boarding school, and the kids get in trouble and do this and they do that. But was this like more of a life-saving opportunity for these kids that were deaf? And
for some of these kids, it really was, because they would come from communities where there was no one there to communicate with them. Social services people, they really didn't have the tools to be able to communicate or deal with these kids in a lot of respects. And when in my early years there, we would actually have students come in that were like 13, 14, sometimes 15 years old with zero communication skills.
Oh, boy.
And because of that, along with those zero communication skills, were extreme behavioral issues. And it was amazing how you would see the transformation happen in these children. You know, initially there would be anger, there would be outbursts, there would be violence, there would be situations like that. And then after a certain period of time, you could just see something click. The communication started to be able to flow. The relationships that they were forming with other like students, other like children, you know, with the same situations or similar situations. And then all of a sudden you see these lights come on. And it's pretty incredible, because you see them going from anger outbursts and emotional issues and things like that to, you know, graduating at the age of 20 or 21, but graduating from high school with a diploma, being able to read, maybe not reading at grade level, but still being able to read. They know how to do some industrial skills. They have, you know, they have social skills. They have relationships, things that they never even dreamed they had. And it was very rewarding, very rewarding.
I don't want you to take anybody to take this out of context, all right? Was it beneficial for the School for the Blind students to mingle with the School for the Deaf students? And if so, how did they do it?
The blind and the deaf campuses were separate.
Okay.
The blind campus was on the other side of the road, and the blind school had their own programs. And I was involved with some of their programs during some of the summer programs. And it was a really interesting experience. But as far as them actually being able to do things together, there were some situations where they could actually maybe play some sports together or do some things like that together. But being that they're all different levels of deafness and all different levels of blindness, you know, you've got so many different intricacies that you know, when intermingled, every situation is different. So I guess I would say most of those situations were separated from each other.
Did you find it easier to work with the blind because of the fact that you could talk to each other?
Sure, you could sit down and have a conversation. I did have one very interesting summer. I worked as a one-on-one with a very intelligent young man who was both blind and deaf. And I swear to God, this kid was more intelligent than me, but the entire summer we spent communicating in each other's hands, fingerspelling in each other's hands. He would actually be able to communicate verbally with me so I can understand him, but for him to be able to understand anything that was going on around him had to be fingerspelled or signed in his hands. So it was really a very intimate summer that I spent with this young man. I have no idea where he is now, but wherever he is, I'm sure he's successful because he liked to brag because he had a copy of Playboy in his room. But the thing was 2 inches thick, and the whole thing was in Braille. Yeah. So there wasn't a single picture in it.
Oh, yeah.
But he liked to brag that he had Playboy in his room.
Many years ago when KYMN first started, almost 50 years ago, I spent at least one day or maybe two a week in Faribault on Broadway, on Central Avenue, Fourth, calling on clients. And one of the things I saw were individuals probably like yourself with 3, 2, 1, 5 people that seemed to be on an outing from the state school.
It could have been me.
Yeah. And so what was that, a regular thing that you did, or was it a summer excursion? Was it a special reward? Or?
Well, it all depends on the time of year and stuff. But the older students, the more independent, you know, the senior high type students, they usually had permission, you know, once they were done with school and stuff, they had permission to be able to go walk around downtown, go to the stores, whatever, as long as, you know, there were no disciplinary issues or anything like that. But the younger groups, we would frequently take out, and we'd take them to the mall, we'd take them downtown, get them an ice cream cone, just do things that you'd normally do with hearing kids. I had the opportunity, I was a lifeguard and swim instructor and also a bus driver, and so I had the opportunity to actually drive a lot of these kids, you know, 20, 30 kids at a time, and take them to places like, you know, we'd go to the mall or something like that. And they would, some of them you had to keep with you and some of them you had to watch really closely. Some of them were little and they had to stay with you. And the older ones would go do their thing and then we'd all come back at a certain time. But we would go on lots of different outings like that. Just about any field trip you can imagine we did with these students.
And for the kids that were deaf, did you have to be careful of what you're saying to another person in the position you were in because they can read your lips?
Well, actually, we did not. We had a rule amongst staff that you did not speak verbally to another hearing person without signing. So everything that you said, whether you were in the back of a school bus or outside in the playground or whatever, every time you spoke verbally, you signed.
Even if you're talking to a buddy about what you did over the weekend?
Everything.
Wow.
Yeah. Initially, when I first started there, that wasn't so much the rule. And after a while, you know, you came to the realization that, you know, it's just like if you walk into a restaurant and you're the only English speaker and everybody else is Hispanic or whatever, you feel kind of like you don't belong there. You feel a little bit left out. And the whole idea is to try to integrate these folks into as much of a normalized situation as possible. And so it just became the rule. And you just did it. You just did it, even if you're with another hearing staff person in a room that's separated from the entire population. You still just did it.
Did some of the kids or some of the students were they able to read lips and sit downtown and actually listen in on a person's conversation?
Well, like I said before, there were so many different variables in terms of levels of I don't want to use the word negatively, but deficiency.
Okay.
Some were just hard of hearing, had very good speech, had enough auditory training that they were able, with the amplification that they had, to be able to understand. And then there were others that were just totally stone deaf, and you had to be eye to eye with them in order to communicate with them. Some of them would be able to kind of pick up some of the things you said from your lips, but in many of those instances, it was completely reliant on signing skills.
Well, I do know that at least I believe that there are people hired by maybe television producers that read the lips of people on the sidelines during a football game, for example. Now, I can read the lips of some of the coaches when something happens that they don't like. Usually it's not real hard. It's, maybe a four-letter word
or two or three or four. Yeah, yeah.
It is 13 minutes before 11 o'clock. My guest this morning is, what do you call yourself, a Dundas guy or a Northfield guy?
I'm a Northfield guy.
Okay, a Northfield guy that lives closer to Dundas.
Yeah, but we're still Northfield.
Okay. You are?
Yeah.
55057.
That's right. Yep.
Well, you're in Bridgewater Township?
Yep.
Did you vote for me when I ran for office?
I'll vote for you anytime you run.
Well, I ran many years ago, and I there was a primary, and it was between the guy that was in that position and another guy that had held that commissioner's position but quit because he got a job as a weed inspector or something. Anyhow, so something screwed up with that job, and so he jumped back in the race. So now there's three of us.
Okay.
And I won in Lonsdale.
Okay.
But other than that, I lost by 27 or 22 votes.
Okay.
So that morning after, that rained like crazy. We had a big storm that night, and the next morning was the big news with the trees down and all that. And my news director, Jim Allen, gave the results of the commissioner runoff. And he says, later on, we're talking back and forth, and he said, what's it like, Wayne, losing that election? I said, I should have knocked on 22 more doors. And, he says, Wayne, if you would have knocked on 22 fewer doors, you might have won.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today. Don't let a dead battery leave you stranded this winter. When a warning light comes on, it may already be too late. Visit your Napa Auto Care Center for a battery check and make sure your battery is up to the challenge. Need a replacement? Your Napa Auto Care dealer can make it easier on your wallet with a Visa gift card valued at up to $20 on the purchase of a Napa Legend or Napa Premium battery. Visit Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for full details.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. Okay, another number one tune from 1971 on Kim Radio. That's the year my guest graduated.
If you want me.
Mm-hmm.
Twice on the pipe.
If the Can you name that tune?
No. I'm familiar with it, but I can't name it.
Means you meet me in the hallway. Whoa, twice on the pipe. Means you ain't gonna show.
Tony Orlando.
And Dawn.
And Dawn. And I found out that Dawn was a couple of women that he traveled with, and they did all the backup.
Okay.
And the name of the song is Knock Three Times.
Read how many times I saw.
From 1971, the year my guest graduated from high school. And I played a couple of his songs here this morning. And for the first time in the history of mankind, we have a gentleman who had his songs played on the radio. But we have a common friend in Craig Wozner.
Sure do.
Okay. Now, do you know who Richardson, Sam's dad? I can't remember his first name. But anyhow, he used to be the general manager of the Northfield News. Then he went on to the Northfield City Hospital and was their HR guy. And last name is Richardson, wife's name is Pat, son's name is Sam, he's a principal at Greenville. Anyhow, he wrote the words to the tune of Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Okay.
Which is one of my favorite songs of all time. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody about it yesterday. It was Clancy Docmo. And I don't know where it came up, but anyhow, he talked about my favorite song is Ghost Riders in the Sky. I said, so is mine. He said, so-and-so sang it. And I said, well, Vaughn Monroe was the first one. Oh, Frankie Lane, he said. Well, he did record it.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I going with this, you're wondering? Well, Mr. Richardson wrote the words, and our friend Craig Wozner produced this particular thing called The Ballad of Wayne Eddy. Do you want to hear it?
Sure, why not?
Now, if you've been around long enough to know the things that I've been involved with and within the community and on the radio, you'll get what these words are about. So, we'll get it started here. Already you know that's Craig Wozner, by the way, he opens things. First time I ever played this in 2018.
Into town one bright and sunny day. Kim Radio was launched one day with a pump and away. He sat beside the microphone and settled in his chair, broadcasting on the AM dial. Wayne Eddy on the air. He pledged to take the town by storm with wit, guile, and charm. He hawked airtime, he trapped the news, he sounded storm's alarms. He joined the clubs, he volunteered, he made his way with flair, broadcasting on the AM dial, Wayne Eddy on the air. Yippee-yi-yay. That moon, the cherry tree, the years, oh, how they slid. He helped restore the Scriber's front. He rode with Jesse James. Booster was his middle name. Between Eddie M. and Wayne. He rode a hog, he rode a horse, his convertible so cool. His hair was froed, he liked the look, the sideburns there were too. The polyester plaid he wore so loud and debonair, broadcasting on the AM dial, Wayne Eddy on the air.
Well, there you go. I satiated my ego for today.
That was great.
What's fun about that is, number one, it was a surprise, and number two, the everything he's singing about is a part of my life.
Sure,
and I
sure.
mean polyester. I used to wear polyester suits.
And you
suits.
Got a plaid shirt on right now.
Yeah. And the sideburns and the fro. I had a fro hair. I actually had hair at one time. So it's and there's two more minutes of that. I only played 3 minutes of it. So it's 4 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio 1080, the one, 95.1 FM. Have you tuned in 95.1 FM on the farm?
Oh, all the time.
Comes in pretty good?
Yep.
Remember, did you ever go to 1080? Because when you were a kid, we were given the snow closings.
I'm sure we
are,
did.
You probably listen to KDHL or WDGY or KDWB.
Yeah. Rock and roll.
Rock and roll is here to stay. I dig it. It's the most. So what are your plans for the future? Are you now a retired state of Minnesota employee with benefits that go with that?
Well, I retired from the state and went from there to Malt-O-Meal, and I was Malt-O-Meal another 20 years. So... Yeah, so
I'm, ooh, but I'm, must, but I must have some pretty good pension.
Well,
checks
I took my whole state retirement and put it into the farmhouse.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
which it really needed, you know. But yeah, I'm doing all right. I've been retired now for a couple of years.
So I think I may have asked you this before. Billy Stanton is number one.
Sure.
And
sure.
What number were you when you retired?
I was number 296.
296.
Yeah,
okay.
296.
And you weren't there when Post took over?
Oh, yeah.
You were?
Yep, sure was.
Oh, that a cultural shock?
Well, it was kind of a gradual thing, so it wasn't really too traumatic. You know, I mean, everybody was, some people were preaching doom and gloom, but, you know, it was just a change that everybody had to go along with.
Did you ever go up to where they exploded the puff rice and puff wheat in the old building by the dam?
I've been over every inch of that plant, both top and bottom.
Up and on the very top?
Very, very top.
With the hammer?
Yep.
In the heat?
Yep. In fact, I caught a fire up there once. Ended up calling in the fire department and all that kind of stuff.
So. Oh. They don't do it the same way anymore, the puff wheat and puff rice. They don't use that old gun that they had.
Well, everything has been modernized.
Yeah.
So.
I wonder if they kept it just for a demonstration.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure now.
For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, Quaker Oats used to do ads, and they had pictures of a cannon. And they'd say, shot from cannons. Mm-hmm. And I got to actually go up, and I think it was Rick Sellers.
Yeah, we called them guns.
Yeah. I think Rick Sellers was the guy that was there when we went up there and watched them do that.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, and is there any last thing? I got one song I can play. I don't think there's anything coming up at 11, but... and I picked the one that was the shortest, and I can't pronounce it. Haita. I don't know what
it's
the name
actually,
is.
It's actually.
Oh, that's an instrumental.
Yeah, it's an instrumental.
Yeah, okay.
With a little bit of vocalization in it.
Yeah. Okay, well, you also had Ragged Brown Bear, we didn't play, inspired by the film Schindler's List.
Yeah,
okay, good movie.
Yeah.
It's about a little girl. Yeah. And then we played. Stone at Ripple River. I hope she heard it. And instrumental for your granddaughter, Jordan. And then we played, I think we did a good job with playing your
great.
Stuff. What an interesting life.
Thank you.
When I called you and asked you to join me, you said, well, I already was there. And, well, that was all about your daughter and Holy Night. But you've been around.
A little bit,
Now, every time I go out past Dundas, once I cross the railroad tracks, I'm going to start looking for that dirt road called Case.
Cates, C-A-T-E-S.
Oh, I've been on that.
Yeah.
I thought you said Case. Cates.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gates.
That's not Gates.
Cates.
Yep, Cates.
Okay. Wonder what that stands for, if that's a name in the Rice County.
I don't know.
Cates.
Must be named after somebody.
Wild West Cates.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you signed for me on the station identification. I wonder if the FC will accept a sign.
Do you think they'll like the color of my shirt?
I like your shirt.
No, but will the FCC, do you think?
am I missing something? Oh, boy, right over my head. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It's been a real pleasure. Michael Daly, my guest here this morning. And for those of you that are wondering, what's Michael Daly or who's that? Well, he is in the middle of the twins, Pat and Thomas, 6 years older than him, followed by his sister Kathy, Mary Beth, and then Michael. After that, his sister Julia, brother Frank, his sister Peggy, whom he almost forgot, his sister Bridget, and then his little brother Sam. He's married to Julie, has a son named Will, and a daughter named Marissa, and a granddaughter named Jordan. And that is the story of Michael Daly on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 on the AM dial, and 95.1 FM. And I see I got to do a little more computer work here, and I'm learning this very fast. Here we go. Watch this. Or no. Not watch. Listen to this.
Looking for something to do? Wonder what events are going on around town? Find out what's up at our local nonprofits. Check out KYMN's upcoming events calendar on kymnradio.net, courtesy of 95 The One. And listen for Jessica Paxton with the calendar of events at 6:50 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. weekdays on 95 The One and AM 1080.
Someone else to try. And you know you better watch your step, or you gonna get hurt yourself.